This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Cioli podcast.
And it is the day after the big debate, and I'm so glad you're here for this hour of nonstop talk. 855-839-1210 on the Cioli Show on Twitter at Rich Cioli and Facebook.com/Cioli Show. There's a new front runner for the Democrats, America's mother-in-law, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden's days are numbered. Donald Trump is going to sail to re-election with an epic electoral vote landslide. That's if everything continues the way it's going. Now, could something change? Of course. I don't know what I don't know. I don't know the future. But as of right now, I would say you'd be a very, very smart person to put your money on Trump's reelection. That's what I would do. 855-839-1210. Now, if you were there last night, you heard me stop a debate several times and comment in real time. I also did Inside the Mind of Bernie, as I did his subconscious coming out and commenting on what he really thinks of all the candidates. But last night, the Democrats had one job. That job was to try to take the momentum away from Elizabeth Warren. All right. Now, I know that her voice to you may be nails on a chalkboard, as some of you have said on Twitter, but I have to play this stuff because it's my job. But also because more it plays, the more people realize, my God, I can't listen to that for 4 years. Please, please make it stop. Can't listen to that for 4 years. And that's the truth. You can't. Now, just to show you how totalitarian the modern Democrat Party is, they would like to take away Donald Trump's First Amendment rights. They'd like to take away a lot of rights from people. One of the reasons why I cannot get, in any way, shape, or form, I can't support the modern Democrat Party is because this Democrat Party is absolutely about totalitarianism in every way, shape, or form. Because, you know, I'll meet people sometimes and they go, well, I mean, you know, why can't you give Democrats a break? I go, well, oh, look, I can give a Democrat a break, but but your party's nuts. Why are you part of this? Why are you part of this organization that is so extreme on every area, from energy to abortion to healthcare to, I mean, you name it. There's no middle ground in this party at all. None. Now, I'm obviously a very conservative libertarian kind of a guy. So it would take a lot for me to ever go in that direction. I mean, they'd have to change on almost every single position. But my point is that the Democrat Party today, right now, at this moment in time, is more extreme than it's been since the late 1960s. And they got slaughtered in the late 1960s. And so for Democrats right now, they have to make a decision. Moderate Democrats. Are they going to do something to stop Elizabeth Warren, or are they going to hand Donald Trump re-election in a landslide? Because if she's the nominee, he wins in a landslide. So that's the question they're asking themselves back at DNC headquarters. Problem for them, though, is that Elizabeth Warren's people are very fired up, and if the DNC pulls any dirty tricks, her people, and maybe Bernie's people too, will all stay home. They will absolutely stay home and sit on their hands for 4 years, because here's the dirty little secret. They know Donald Trump is really not Hitler. They know Donald Trump is really not as bad as they think Donald Trump is. And they're going to be fine with him for 4 more years. They would rather do that than risk 8 years of the Democrat Party putting in their establishment candidate. That is the truth. I'm not wrong on that. Now, forget for a second everything you hear on TV with all these commentators who are warning about a second term and the end of the republic and the end of democracy and everything else. Those people on television, whether it's crazy Lawrence O'Donnell, stop the hammering, or it's Rachel Maddow, or it's the lesser Cuomo, they love the ratings of Donald Trump's America. That's the bottom line. They love the ratings. And they are not really worried about the republic, and they're not really worried that in his second term he's going to turn out to be Hitler and the, you know, the camps, and they're not worried about that. They actually, I think deep down inside, would love another 4 years of Donald Trump. They would love it. Look, think about it from this perspective, right? Rush Limbaugh is the preeminent talk radio host in America. Rush rose to prominence in the 1990s when Bill Clinton was president, right? There were other talk show hosts, obviously, around the same time. Bob Grant, who I think is one of the best talkers that ever lived. God rest his soul. Bob Grant. But Bob Grant was really local to New York. I mean, he was local, and Bob Grant was the voice in New York, and man was great at what he did. And, of course, you know, we had people in every city around America who at various times were different voices. But Rush was national at a time when a Democrat was president, building up the EIB network, and nobody has come close to him in terms of his success, in terms of being able to create something out of nothing. Because really, with the exception of local hosts around the country, I mean, Irv Homer in Philly and some other people, there was never a Rush Limbaugh, right? A national conservative talk show host that was a new model, and it happened because of Bill Clinton. For the media right now, they are experiencing that same thing with Donald Trump. So new stars are being created. For example, over at CNN, there's that young reporter, Caitlin Collins, who was kicked out of the White House. And you know, Caitlin Collins is loving the Donald Trump era. Jim Acosta is loving the Donald Trump era, despite the fact that he pretends like he was in a concentration camp and, you know, right at the press internment camp, writing his dumb book. He's loving this era. They love this. Now, if a Democrat wins, and it's a moderate Democrat in particular, well, that's really tough for them because their base is crazy, progressive, wacko, socialist. And what are they going to do? Are they going to beat up on the moderate Democrat who's not delivering on all these things? No, they'd much rather be able to beat up Donald Trump night after night for the next 4.5 years. They would love that. They would love to be able to every night go after Donald Trump. They're fine with it. I mean, for them, in their mind, it's ratings. You know why it's ratings? Because of this. Because even though ratings in because you might say, whoa, Zioli, wait a second. Aren't you the one who always says the Lester Cuomo has no ratings? Right, he doesn't. He's 16th out of 16. But remember, MSNBC and Fox News go back and forth in terms of who's number one. But for MSNBC, the Donald Trump era has made them the ability to every night come on TV and overserve their customer who's dying to find out if today is the day that this will finally end. The Trump presidency will come to an end. That consumer, 2.2 million people of them, every night tunes in to hear the good news. Whether they go all in with Chris Hayes or with Rachel Maddow, you notice you never see them in the same place at the same time, just pointing that out, or they go with crazy Lawrence O'Donnell, or they tune into the 11th hour with Brian Williams, even though it's not the 11th hour, they come for the main course entree of this is almost the end of the Trump presidency. They'll come back for the next 4 years. They'll be happy to do that. And MSNBC will be happy to serve them that. Comcast will be happy to pay the bills. And the truth of the matter is that if they can get a socialist progressive kook in there, they'd love to do it. But if they can't, they're fine with Trump. They're okay with it. They'll live. They'll make ratings. They'll be fine. They'll be okay. They'll pay the bills. Life will be good for them. The brunch-going woke progressive, the young brunch millennial, who's all in on America's mother-in-law, Medicare for all the socialist ideals that they were taught in college. You now have two candidates up there on the stage, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, going back and forth about who's going to be more socialist. For the young woke progressives, this is everything that they were told in college. You know, they were told in college day in, day out, look, problem with socialism is it just wasn't tried right. It was just tried by a bunch of murderous dictators. But if we get somebody cool in there, it's going to work. That's what they were told for 4 years. And it's never worked anywhere it's tried in the world. And the only time it's ever been tried, it's led to murderous regimes or people starving in the streets like Venezuela and murderous regimes like China, for example. Anyway. These young woke progressive millennials, when they're having their French toast pancakes and reading the Sunday New York Times, no idea the New York Times was an anti-Semitic, anti-Italian, awful, awful racist newspaper for most of its history. They don't know anything different than what they've been told in college. But they do know that Bernie was cheated in 2016. And if that happens again, oh, they'll sit home. They'll wait. They'll sit home, too, because they'd be very happy to put on their go out to their protests with their friends and protest Trump. They're okay with that. They'll be fine with that. You mark my words. They'll be okay with that. Truth of the matter is that we have reached a point in this country right now with the Democrat Party. The pendulum has swung so far left that candidates are openly talking about taking away First Amendment rights from people. We've heard them talk about taking away our Second Amendment rights for a very, very long time. And by the way, when I say rights, because I get emails, of course I know that all of our rights come from our Creator, endowed by our Creator. I understand that. What I talk about is what's written down in the Constitution, ratified by the states, in the form of the Bill of Rights. I don't need a lecture on where our rights come from. I understand. I'm a Jeffersonian in that context. I understand natural law, Thomas Locke, all of it. I get it. But what's written down in the Bill of Rights is what we'll use as the focus point of this, of our rights. And we've heard them talk about taking away our Second Amendment rights for a long time. Now they're openly talking about taking away First Amendment rights in a presidential debate forum. These are not going to be the guardians of free speech. These are not people looking to protect opinions in the public square. These are people looking to take away your right to say something they don't like. Now, last night I was hanging out with my buddy John Hoyt, Lieutenant John Hoyt, at the FOP Lodge 5. And I said, John, you know, in 20 years, man, you're going to see the first police officer in America arrest somebody for putting out climate change propaganda. The woke police will be out there. The woke police will be out there, and it may not even be 20 years, by the way. It may be sooner than that. I could see somebody being arrested within the next 5 or 10 years for saying something that is hurtful to somebody's pronoun choice, somebody who puts out misinformation about climate change, somebody who's a denier. I could see all those things happening. I predicted if a Democrat becomes president, one of these kooks up there on the stage, you will have a national hate speech law code within the first term of their administration. And people will get locked up for their speech. It's absolutely going to happen. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Zioli, come on. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. That's malarkey. No, it's not. Last night during the debate, Kamala Harris and America's mother-in-law, Elizabeth Warren, very proudly, by the way, talking about the fact that Donald Trump should lose his First Amendment rights. Take a listen.
What we're talking about is a grave injustice when rules apply to some but not equally to all, and in particular when the rules that apply to the powerless don't apply to the powerful. And so, Senator Warren, I just want to say that I was surprised to hear that you did not agree with me that on this subject of what should be the rules around corporate responsibility for these big tech companies, when I called on Twitter to suspend Donald Trump's account, that you did not agree. And I would urge you to join me, because here we have Donald Trump, who has 65 million Twitter followers, and is using that platform as the president of the United States to openly intimidate witnesses, to threaten witnesses, to obstruct justice. And he and his account should be taken down. We saw in El Paso that shooter in his manifesto was informed by how Donald Trump uses that platform. And this is a matter of corporate responsibility. Twitter should be held accountable and shut down that site. It is a matter of safety and corporate accountability.
Thank you. Senator Warren, you can respond.
So, look,
now let's stop it right there for a quick second, please. Now, Kamala Harris was a totalitarian statist prosecutor out of California. All right. Love putting people in jail. Love using the law. Loves it. Kamala Harris is talking about now taking away somebody's First Amendment rights because their words lead to people doing actions. Get it? She brings up the El Paso shooter and she blames Trump's words for that. You see what I mean about a hate speech code? Because your words are actually weapons, like the Cher song. Words are like weapons, they wound sometimes, is a Cher song called Turn Back Time. If I could turn, by the way, she blocked me on Twitter. So if I could turn back time and figure out what I did to cause her to block me on Twitter, I would.
You're not going
to
see her.
What did I do to hurt her?
You're not going to see her pearls of wisdom now. What will you do, Zioli?
I miss all her craziness, pearls of wisdom from Cher. But if I could turn back time and take back the tweet that hurt you, Cher, I would. No, but that's what I mean. Kamala Harris is blaming Trump's words for somebody else's actions. That's exactly what you do with a hate speech code. You say that words lead to actions. That's why words, it's something that's been a context known as prior restraint. I stop you from saying something, because if I don't stop you from saying something, you'll say it and somebody will do something. Now, this is scary to think about. Someone who was elected statewide in California, was a prosecutor, could theoretically become president, and that's her view on words. That's her view on things people say. And America's mother-in-law, Elizabeth Warren, is ready to jump right in and back her up on this. Take a listen.
So, look, I don't just want to push Donald Trump off Twitter. I want to push him out of the White House. That's our job.
Right.
But the way...
Join me in saying that his Twitter account should be shut down.
Let's figure out...
No?
Join her.
It is that we have had laws on the books for antitrust for over a century and yet for decades now. We've all called on how the big drug companies are calling the shots in Washington, big ag, how the gun industry, big tech. You know, we really need to address the elephant in the room, and that is how campaigns are financed.
You can't say you're
I announced
responsibility
this morning,
if it doesn't apply to everyone.
I announced this morning that I'm not going to take any money from big tech executives, from Wall Street executives. We've already agreed, Bernie and I, we're not taking any money from big pharma executives. You can't go behind closed doors and take the money of these executives and then turn around and expect that these are the people who are actually finally going to enforce the laws. We need campaign finance rules and practices that support us all.
It does not represent a system of justice to say that the rules will apply differently to different people. This is a matter, you are saying, of holding big tech accountable.
Yes.
Holding big tech accountable because they have an outsized influence on people's perceptions about issues, and they actually influence behaviors. We all have to agree this is their power. It is immense.
Senator Klobuchar, let me bring you in here. Your
response. I'm not finished. I'm not finished. And so what I am saying is that it seems to me that you would be able to join me in saying the rule has to apply to Twitter the same way it does to Facebook.
Look, I think all of the rules should apply across the board. I don't have a problem with that.
So you will what join I me do saying have Twitter a should shut down that account
is that if we're going to talk seriously about breaking up big
join
tech,
me in my totalitarianism.
Ask if people are taking money
come
from
to
the
dark
big tech
side.
Executives. If we're going to talk seriously about breaking up big drug companies,
join me in destroying free speech.
Financing their campaigns by taking
you know you want to search your heart.
If we are going to talk
search
about
your feelings
and having some serious regulation over Wall Street, we should ask if people are funding their campaigns by taking money from those executives.
Any organization she doesn't want to regulate, any big blank she didn't mention in that. Now,
wow.
The only thing that's safe is big woke. Big woke is the only thing that's safe. Otherwise, everybody, she's coming after everybody. Look, we're doing nonstop talk, not going anywhere.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right, so with the idea then of shutting down and taking away people's words and their rights to speak and that sort of thing, think about it. Now, the Democrat Party is solidly against First Amendment, Second Amendment, and they would love also to bring back a lot of the spying on us and that sort of thing, too. So they're not a due process party. Remember, they would love to put you on a list and say, you're on a list, you can't buy a firearm. That is against due process rights because they're charging you, basically making you guilty before you've even done anything. They're all in on these red flag laws which say if somebody drops a dime on you, we can put you on a list and your weapons will be seized without any due process. So they're all in on this stuff of just what it's totalitarianism is what it is. It's totalitarianism. When I say, when the government says we're going to use our power to force companies to shut down your way to communicate with people. Face it, Twitter and Facebook are private sector companies. They can shut down anybody they want. But if the government is forcing them to shut somebody down, that is the government taking action against the First Amendment, which is the actual definition of what the First Amendment, why it's there to protect free speech from the government. All right, 855-839-1210 is the number. Did you watch last night? Any thoughts on last night? The big takeaway, of course, Joe Biden is his days are numbered. Let's see now. Hunter Biden yesterday pretended to cry as he says Trump is sending America into a death spiral. All right? A death spiral. Hunter Biden with the fake tears, just like his fake job on that fake Burisma board. Cut two.
President Trump likely will see or at least read about this interview. Anything you'd like him to hear from you?
No. I mean, really, no. It's really hard for me to say anything snarky right now or combative because I was raised to respect that office. I don't know. It's making me emotional.
Why do you think you're getting emotional?
I'm going to fake cry here. Hang on.
I'm really proud of being an American.
And I just watched Beaches.
But I have Bette to Midler admit, I take no pleasure in this. As watching this death spiral of this administration, this president, and the people.
This interview is a death spiral, man.
How do you think this will
campaign.
All play out in the history books?
I don't know. I hope that
I've never read a history book.
The history isn't fully written yet. I hope that a lot of people that that have a chance at redemption here stand up for what is right.
How about you? Have you ever read a history book, Hunter Biden? That's my question. 855-839-1210. Now, I know, it's bad, really, really bad. He's just shut the kimono and hide it up, man. Just hide it. So last night during the debate, there were a couple of other moments. The post-debate analysis, MSNBC was very, very much, they knocked the annoyed, petulant Elizabeth Warren. They gushed over Pete Buttigieg, they called him 2020's Obama. Now with more gay, cut 13.
That's not true.
I thought I read that in my notes there. That was inside the mind of Bernie again, I guess.
You're referring to the Pete Buttigieg the podcast that he did, right?
Oh, right. The podcast that said he wasn't gay enough. Yes. Right, right. I'm confusing which woke clip I have in my formerly... pepperoni-stained fingers.
The liberal left are accusing him of not being gay enough or,
you know, why don't we play that so that nobody thinks I was trying to do something. All right, so we'll do that first. This was a podcast where Pete Buttigieg was accused of not being gay enough. Again, I ask, how gay does one have to be gay?
There are people on the internet who think you are not gay enough to run for president, that you should be a brown person, that you should be a trans person. What's your response to that?
I am who I am. The whole process of coming out was realizing that I only got to be one person. One of the things I think we need to have a conversation about, frankly, within the LGBTQ plus world, is whether we're going to police the boundaries of our own identity or whether we're going to accept people for who they are.
Todd Phillips, who directed a lot of comedy films in the early 2000s, came out a few weeks ago and said, I don't want to make comedy anymore because everyone gets triggered. Everyone's offended. There's also kind of a subgenre of comedy with like Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr who are deliberately trying to be provocative because they're sick of what they think is a culture that's too politically correct.
Look, two things are true. One is that part of how comedy works is it challenges our conventions. It challenges our sensitivities. And that's part of what it can contribute. Another thing that's also true is hurtful things and hateful things often come at us in the form of humor. And we just have to learn how to handle both of those things. When a piece of art that is out there to challenge conventions does something that's really harmful, then I think it's time to turn it off. But we get to have those debates.
Part of Dave Chappelle's shtick.
No, there's no debate. Hang on a second. You see, now this guy's running for president. There's no debate about when we turn it off. No. That's up to the individual to decide if they want to turn it off. Like, in other words, if you're watching a movie and you go, I don't think it's appropriate for my kids, or I don't like this comedy, or I don't like this sex scene, then you turn it off. If it offends you, turn it off. That is not a debate we have in this country about when to turn it off. No. Wow. And presidents don't get to engage in those debates. Like, okay, now is the time to debate whether or not we all as a nation shut off Dave Chappelle. No, that's not how it works.
My God.
Pete Buttigieg.
Can you imagine? He grew up, like, he's about my age. So he grew up when I'm sure he spoke out against the religious right when they came after music and movies and TV. And now he's doing the exact same thing. The exact same thing.
Right. Tipper Gore started all this nonsense in the 90s with her warning labels on music. Remember that?
Yeah.
The graphic warnings on music. That was her big thing. Yep. Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife. And that was what her big crusade in the 90s was. That's exactly what we're talking about now. But instead of warnings, we're talking about when to shut it off. Not even put a warning on it. Like, Dave Chappelle's show has a warning. But now they want to decide the debate of when it gets shut off. By who? The president and Congress? When we've crossed the line of hate speech, when feelings are hurt, when the woke police goes, well, we think people's feelings are hurt, so they unplug it? No, that's not a debate we have. That is a debate the person watching has within themselves or with the person they're watching it with. honey, I'd like to turn this off. I'm offended by this portrayal of whatever. Okay, turn it off. That is not a debate the nation engages in. This is what I mean about where we're going with totalitarianism. That's what I mean. And this is craziness now. Is that the end of that clip, Greg?
No, does this still go on? There's more.
Part of Dave Chappelle's shtick in the last couple of comedy specials he did was deliberately making fun of transgender people.
I don't want to write these jokes, but I just can't stop.
So should that just be turned off? Should he not have a Netflix deal?
I haven't seen the special. I will say that there comes a point where you're just straight up hurting people. And I don't know what goal you're hoping to achieve. As much as there's been a lot of political
correctness. Wait, call on me. Call on me. I know the goal. To make people freaking laugh. That's the goal. To make people laugh because words don't hurt anybody. That's all. That's the goal. The goal you're trying to achieve as a comedian is to make people laugh, pure and simple. That's the goal. That's what you do, and that's your job as a comedian, is to make comedy to make people laugh. That's the goal. I can answer that question for you, Pete Buttigieg. All right, keep going.
And I don't know what goal you're hoping to achieve. As much as there's been a lot of political correctness, there's also this weird way in which it's become fashionable to attack political correctness that I think has become its own weird correctness out there.
So stand up against it. Stand up against political correctness and say we're not going to attack comedians anymore and movies anymore and all this stuff. We're going to let people say whatever they want and do whatever they want, and it'd be the end of it. Make that bold stand. But you won't, because you know that your woke base wants you to crack down on people like Dave Chappelle. Ban hurtful comics, ban words, ban jokes, ban movies, ban all these things. Now, luckily, Dawn thinks that this tide is changing based on her boys. But I think it's just because you and your husband just raised them right and didn't raise them to be the kind of people that would want to be totalitarian little dictators. But you're confident that your boys' generation is going to turn the tide on this.
Yes, absolutely. And they've, especially the 13-year-old, voices this and says the millennials are ridiculous. They're trouble. So it's very interesting. But that age group, especially like 12, 13-year-olds, they watch all the old shows that are politically incorrect. They watch them. Because they're like, you know, they're taboo. For the older kids. So these younger kids are watching saying, this is hysterical. This is funny. What is wrong with these, you know, the older kids or the millennials, whatever. So it's like, very interesting.
Greg, you know what she's saying reminds me of? Do you remember when we were kids? We would sneak down and try to watch HBO After Dark
all
or Cinemax?
Time. Yep.
All the time, right?
All the time.
Now, Dawn's kids sneak down to watch Caddyshack. They're sneaking down to watch the politically incorrect movies and TV shows that they're not allowed to watch anymore because of the woke police.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, no,
they're sneaking down to watch old school because people have said old school's not woke.
Yep.
And so they want to see it now. Now it's edgy and they want to see it. And so that's what you mean, Dawn, in terms of that. It's like because when people can't have something, they want it. And so that's how the title shift.
Yeah. So now it's like The Office. You know, that's what she said. Like that show. There's so many shows that they absolutely love. They think are so funny. And they think it's this whole woke thing is crazy. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they make fun of
them. Right. I hope you're right, Dawn. I just don't know because you have raised your kids in a literal bubble of society. No, but the thing about it, though, is that they're not at a public school, Catholic school.
True.
And I think a lot of this woke indoctrination is happening in public schools. I'll give you an example. Even in preschool, there was a letter sent home about how we're all going to celebrate our differences and dress wacky and all this other, but the older kids, it's going to be sit around and talk about why everybody's different from each other. And you know what I mean? And then instead of saying, well, how are we all alike and how can we all unite and be one per people? It's how are you different? How are you different? How are you different? And then how do we respect your differences? Well, don't make jokes. Don't make comments. Don't see this movie. Don't read that book. Don't see this. Don't see that. All in the name of respecting people's feelings. Got it? So that's where the indoctrination takes place, under the guise of respecting people's feelings. So I don't want to make your feelings feel bad, Dawn. Therefore, I won't tell that joke. Greg, I don't want to make your feelings feel bad. Therefore, I won't make that movie.
Yep.
Okay. There's one local, you know, private high school that might have had a climate change author to talk to a group of 14 and 15-year-olds. They made fun of the guy. and on social media just clobbered him and laughed to it. And we're just picking apart some of the things that they felt he was going too far. Like, dude, the world's not going to end in 12 years or, you know, things of that nature. But so even I think if schools have, you know, all these different authors coming through, you know, the kids nowadays, they're not stupid. I mean, they're smart and they're seeing all of this and they're very analytical about it. So I think the pendulum always swings the other way. I think that's the way life is.
You know, if Pete Buttigieg swang the other way, he could be more in line with what. Never mind. 855-839-1210.
According to liberal Twitter.
Where you were going with
the liberal Twitter. Liberal Twitter, Dawn, is what I'm saying. They would like if he was another letter, is my point.
I can't imagine they say that stuff to him. That, you know, imagine saying you're not female enough or you're not black enough or you're not brown enough. It's shocking that somebody would say that to his face, to me.
My gay friends will tell you that the most critical people on other gay people are gay people. Like they're the most critical on other gay people. So
I just love the fact that Greg just said my gay friends.
I know, like
no, my gay friends will tell you.
I have some gay friends that
we all do.
Would tell you that.
Greg's like George Costanza. He's gonna find a gay guy after the show to be friends with.
Is there some special quota at like 8:02 that that you have to call me out? Is that like
I don't know. I mean, your gay friends are tweeting at me telling me to go after you at 8:02. That's when they wake up.
Oh, that's
big night
not
of
right.
Clubbing, I guess. I don't know, whatever that is that they do. 855-839-1210. The whole thing is so stupid. It keeps just trying to divide us, and I hate it. I really do. I hate when people are divided because we have so much that unites us as people, but a lot of people play on this whole idea of you're different, you're special, you're a snowflake, and then I got to protect your feelings. When politicians start talking about using government action to protect people's feelings, that gets really, really scary to me. Really scary, because that's called hate speech, and that is a problem. Kate is in the Northeast. Kate, good morning. How are you? Hi, Kate.
Hi, good morning.
Kate. Hi, good morning. Go ahead.
So
Kate.
We were at the zoo on Sunday with our grandsons. One is 11, one is 6. They were visiting from Maryland. And we're walking around, and we buy them these drinks. And my 11-year-old says, "Oh, my God, Mamie, these paper straws, what a ridiculousness. I can't wait till we're older and we can change this." And my husband and I were both just looking at each other because the parents, his mother is our daughter, and our son-in-law, are total millennials, and we are always watching what we say around them. But it was just such a relief to think, oh, my God, these kids do get it. And I said to him, my husband, Ryan, home, I'm like, you know, he always talks about this all the time. Him and Dawn, they always are saying how the next generation are on this.
Yeah.
So then
we were like, so, Bren, what else do you think is like a little wackadoo? And he's like, oh, all the rules and like we have to. And then he says, and I have enough trouble with English. Then now they're talking to me about pronouns in school. I'm like, well, you know, you just kind of have to go with the flow. And he does go to a private school down in Maryland. But even there, it's obvious that there's just certain things that go on, but we were greatly relieved, my husband and I, because we do worry about that a lot. All this
good. I'm glad to hear that. Kate, thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much, and thanks for listening. Thank you. Last night, a woman came up to me and gave me 3 Trump straws, one for each of us, of the reusable Trump straws. So I have those. 855-839-1210.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right, I got a lot of clips to get to. There's a lot more debate analysis to come. Don't you worry. I want to quickly play you a clip, and then we'll go to check in with Dawn real quick, and then more analysis throughout the entire morning. This is what we do on this show. We do it better than anybody else on the Zeoli Show. Last night, all right, the question became, and this was a big question, whether or not in the post-debate analysis, the media was going to call out Kamala Harris for wanting to ban Trump on Twitter, all right? This is fake Republican, former Republican Nicole Wallace, angry as hell, post-debate, very happy with the totalitarianism exhibited on stage last night.
I think think she just made that argument even better there than she did on the debate stage, and she made it pretty well on the debate stage. But her point is not abstract.
No.
Cesar Sayak, I mean, there are people seeking to carry out violence who, their most readily accessible access to Donald Trump's words are on his Twitter feed. She's been proven, I mean, her point is an accurate one beyond debate. So I think she's making a defensible point. I also love, love, love that she refuses to lower the bar for Donald Trump. You know, should we do more than just his Twitter? Well, sure, but we have to start somewhere. I mean, he doesn't, and I think when, if you look at what's going on, you look at Republicans finally waking up or getting some religion on his conduct or his misconduct around foreign policy. I mean, the idea that he didn't know what he was doing, and that seems to be the White House position about the slaughter of America's allies in Syria, the Kurds, that he just, you know, hello, you can imagine him in you know, sweats or something talking to Erdogan with nobody listening, who understood that he was greenlighting a deadly military operation.
Now, the endorsement of banning the president of the United States from Twitter, if they can ban him, they can ban you, they can ban me. And this is now openly debated and discussed in the modern Democrat Party. It's crazy, kids. It's crazy. Luckily, though, medical marijuana will make us all feel better. Bernie Sanders was high as a kite last night, we believe, on something. Maybe not medical marijuana. He denied it, but he was definitely high on something. Maybe it was life. Who knows? Take a listen. Oh, wait, sorry. I should tell you the
number.
Sorry. I have it.
I'm healthy.
Sorry.
I'm feeling great, but I would like to respond to that question.
I want to start by saying...
And Senator Sanders is in favor of medical marijuana. I want to make sure that's clear as well.
Thank you.
Senator Sanders, this debate does tonight. Mark your... This debate...
I am on something way stronger than pot, little kid. Listen... All I know is this. I'll give you a hint. Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
He's not on LSD. He was not on LSD last night. Let's make that clear.
Cuckoo, ka-choo. I am the walrus. Look at my hand. Get that hand up in the air. That dandruff on my jacket. What is that?
Oh boy.
Are those leprechauns on my lapel? No, what the hell is that?
You see things, yes.
I'm feeling good. I see billionaires crying in the streets. Anybody have any Doritos?
No, I don't know if LSD makes you hungry.
Oh, I think he's just hungry. Yeah. Guy's had a long week. Poor guy. Long week. Dawn, good morning. How are we looking today?
And good morning. We've got heavy rain on the way, but a beautiful morning right now. 55 degrees. Talk Radio 1210. WPHT is the only show news brought to you by IT Landis. So no more tuna lunch shaming at Cherry Hill Public Schools. The district is now implementing a new lunch policy following, obviously, national attention and a lot of negative backlash. By the way, Cherry Hill taxpayers already paid $25,000 in unpaid food bills, but now there's actually a new $18,000 bill involving some 350 families. So angry parents, some students speaking out at last night's board meeting saying lunch shaming is awful by serving tuna fish sandwiches to kids whose parents fell behind on their lunch payments. So this new policy the board voted on allows students owing $10 or more to order any standard hot meal, but no a la carte items. It could ban no a la carte. It could ban.
By the way, let me just mention for a second. There are just to show you how good we have it in the United States of America. There are kids around the world going, can somebody please get me a tuna fish sandwich? That I haven't eaten in a week.
Porridge, please.
Send them to India. There's a lot of poverty in this world, not in our country. So that's where we can reject tuna fish sandwiches. But as I'm saying, that's how good we got it in America. It's great, right? That's how great our country is. Look
that's
at that.
That's true. We
a
are
tuna
blessed.
Fish sandwich. A tuna fish sandwich becomes something you can actually reject as a sign of the scarlet letter T for tuna. You know what I mean? Like, there were immigrants in this country when they came to this country, they would have killed for a tuna fish sandwich. My grandpa would have loved a tuna fish sandwich back in the day. You know?
What would he have said?
He would have said, excuse me, eh? On a nice toasted baguette. They don't have a good bread, but these are the baguettes are fine. Excuse me.
Delicious.
So here's the thing,
baguettes
though.
Were all they had because of the French.
They could still ban students from extracurriculars like class trips or school dances, prom even, until their parents pay up the debt. And a lot of people are saying, why don't they just, if parents can't afford it, apply for a federal program that offers free or low-cost meals? But apparently they're saying, look, we need to reach out to a lot of immigrant families who are here illegally. They're afraid of deportation. That's an issue there. So we'll see what
you know. It's going to be, Dawn. It's going to be like this. You remember Land Shark on Saturday Night Live with Chevy Chase? It's going to be turn a fish, ma'am. Sorry, what's that? I got school lunch, ma'am. School lunch for your kids, ma'am. Lunch? Yeah, I mean, some meatball parm. And then they open the door, and it's immigration, right? You grab them. You know what I mean? ICE. That's what they're going to do. See.
Well, Pennsylvania Governor...
That's a sin, Dawn. That's a sin.
It's a sin. Speaking of ICE, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf notifying President Donald Trump that Wolf will not be using state authority granted last month to refuse to accept refugees. So Governor Wolf saying this includes people that other states will not accept. And here's, you're going to love this story. This is a lesson on being too big to win. You've heard of too big to fail. This is too big to win for a kids football team in the Pennsylvania suburbs. So this is the Conshohocken Golden Bears. They actually could face a fine after a winning touchdown. So video of this game has gone viral. Here's where it starts. They're up to 30-0. That's the score in a game against Roxborough. These are 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. So you see their coach in the video yelling to a ref, throw a flag on the next play. The ref does not. That's when a 5-year-old player on the Golden Bears starts sprinting for the end zone. The video shows the coach actually running along the sidelines along the kid, trying to stop the player from scoring. But the kindergartner ignores his coach. He smells victory. He scores. The little guys cheer. But now they've violated a league rule against, yes, blowout games. They actually face a $500 fine. I'm not making this up. So the former Philadelphia Eagle Torrey Smith tweeting out his reaction. A lot of tweets, a lot of this video is like it's blowing up online. But he tweets out his reaction saying, kids need to learn how to deal with failure. Don't want to get smashed. Play better. That's
yeah, right. Well said.
Smith.
By the way, excellent commentary. You were like Meryl Reese right there. That's what I heard. Good job. You got a future. We should talk to Spike about getting you on the Eagles games.
I'm just so glad when you see this. I'm like, you're just saying, you're yelling at the video to the kid. No, don't listen to that coach. You go for
it. I love it.
You know?
I love it.
Patrick's
age,
but you know. Anyway, there's a new study underway in Pennsylvania on the nicotine patch and its impact on improving memory. So more than 8 million Americans have mild cognitive impairment. So it's memory, but it also is a precursor to Alzheimer's. So it's called the MIND study. Researchers say there's preliminary evidence nicotine patches might actually help improve memory because nicotine stimulates parts of the brain they found that are important for memory loss. So these researchers here in Pennsylvania are recruiting 300 volunteers. If you'd like to sign up, the nicotine patch study is being done at Lehigh Hospital and Hershey Medical Center. And doctors say, well, it might be tempting to try this on your own. They do not advise it. So they just said, look, it might sound good, but don't try this at home. Let us do the study. Eyewitness weather. We've got a rainy day in store. So in about 4 hours, the rain begins. It's going to be torrential at times. And it's going to last until at least 10 o'clock tonight. So very heavy rain. So drive safely. Looks like the afternoon drive is going to be a hot, wet mess. Now, if you're a homeowner, now's a great time to update your aging home heating system with a new Carrier system from IT Landis. Now through November 15th, save up to $2,500 in rebates when you install a qualifying Carrier system. For all the details, visit itlandis.com. Dawn Zioli Show News, always on the radio.com app.
That's Thank it. You, Dawn. Appreciate that very much. 855-839-1210, the number for you to weigh in on the debate last night. What I'd like to do is play you a little montage last night. So as I mentioned to you, Joe Biden's goose is cooked. It's only a matter of time until Biden's out. I've been predicting this for a long time now. He would not be the nominee. Elizabeth Warren, America's mother-in-law, is the new frontrunner. And after the debate last night, they were all grilling the candidates on why they targeted Senator Elizabeth Warren during the debate. Take a listen.
Your passion was at a different gear. You may not have known it, but it was obvious, man. And I wonder, are you afraid that the party is going in a direction that is just going to get us killed here in the middle of the country? Is there something that you're aware of now that you're seeing the ascendance of Elizabeth Warren and some of these other ideas that has you afraid?
So a little bit more of a pivot of we have to beat somebody in the form of this president. Here's why I think timing is now. Here are the choices. Warren was a target for you and others. Why?
Why? I have a question specifically on Senator Warren's answer to you on Medicare for All and how she'll pay for it. But just broadly, why did you think it was so important to go after Senator Warren tonight in a way that you haven't before?
Fake Native
Welcome
Americans.
Back with me, as you can see, is New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. Senator, thanks so much for joining us.
Spartacus.
It did seem like there was a lot of criticism of Elizabeth Warren, especially coming from candidates that might be vying for the more of the moderation, more the moderate lane, kind of Buttigieg, Klobuchar. I'm not asking you to be a pundit here, but were you surprised at how much incoming there was at her, especially because you were criticizing people for doing it?
To be with you.
Did the dynamics on the stage feel different? It felt like a lot more people were going directly at Senator Warren as opposed to Vice President Biden, including you.
Now, we're here in Ohio, and Ohio has lost over 300,000 manufacturing jobs and went 8 points to Donald Trump in the last election.
But that's a good story, but it's not the reality. That's what Senator Elizabeth Warren said. Innovation, you know, sounds good, makes great story, not why we're losing jobs.
I can't say that.
Welcome back. We have with us Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren. And Senator, this was the first debate where you were really a co-frontrunner with Vice President Biden. And I have to say, based on the amount of incoming going your way, it seems like whatever the Democratic voters think, your colleagues think that you're the front runner. Do you think any of the attacks that you faced tonight were out of bounds?
Nah. They attack me because they don't like fake Native Americans.
Nah.
They have a lot of hate in their hearts for fake Native Americans.
Nah.
Why is everybody picking on Liz? No, they did not pick on Joe Biden last night. They defended Joe Biden several times last night, and that's how you know. And I stopped the debate last night with using the DVR function. I paused it, and I looked at the audience, and I said, does everybody realize how they're defending Joe Biden? Let me tell you exactly what I said.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right, so last night during the debate, I stopped it, and I said to everyone who was gathered with us at the FOP Lodge 5, just a few minutes after my buddy John McGrody got me a refresher cocktail, I said, does everybody realize how they're defending Joe Biden tonight? And I said, yeah. Everybody said, yes. Yeah. Do you remember the first debate when Cory Booker, Count Grandstangelo, Spartacus Booker, and the Tears of Rage band came out and said, Joe Biden was palling around with Seggies, as Chris Matthews calls them, segregationists, Democrat senators who endorsed segregation. And Booker beat him up over that. Last night, Booker was defending Biden. I said, do you remember the time that Kamala Harris came out at the debate, beat up Joe Biden over busing, when Joe Biden was against the idea of using busing to desegregate schools? And she said that whole impassioned speech about, I was that little girl. You remember that? I was that little girl. Well, Kamala Harris last night was defending Joe Biden. That is all the proof you need that Joe Biden is done. It's over for Joe Biden. They are now at the point now of trying to say nice things about him to defend him in the hopes of getting his endorsement, his supporters, and his money when he gets out of the race. I've advised a lot of candidates in my day, including candidates who've been elected president of the United States, and I'm just going to tell you, though I can't name names, I'm just going to tell you that when you are in a position where you know somebody's going to drop out, your goal is either twofold. One, to try to push them over the edge, or two, to try to pick up their supporters when they are getting out of the race. Famous story, a friend of mine told me once about a conversation that was had in Trump Tower right before Rand Paul was getting out of the race about how the president, or a guy was running for president, was going to deal with Rand Paul and his supporters.
Way to catch yourself there.
And my friend who was in the room, because Greg has gay friends, I have debate prep friends. And one of my debate prep friends told me that the conversation went like this. One of the guys in the room, we'll call him Lori Renandowski, suggested that he should tweet out Rand Paul's a loser and he's going to lose and blah, 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 and he's, you know. And somebody else will call him Mitch Cannoli.
I'm a big fan of Mitch.
It's a new show, I believe, on Netflix.
It is.
He's like an undercover cop, Mitch Cannoli, a big old stash like Magnum P.I.
We have to do a parody of a Mitch Cannoli.
I think we're going to have to do that,
show.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, go on.
This is one of those times where I remind you that this show is completely organic. Nothing is ever planned.
Never.
So that just suggested instead, why not tweet out something to the effect of Rand Paul's people would find a welcome home, be very happy here with me, and you know, which is what the guy did. And New York Times wrote a story about it saying, is this a change in strategy? You know, anyway, my point being that my debate prep friends told me that at that moment it was about getting Rand Paul's supporters because they knew Rand Paul wasn't going to make it. But there were a lot of similarities in terms of the president, the candidate's stance on war and intervention and that sort of thing. And luckily, Mitch Cannoli beat out Lori Renandowski in that debate. And you see Rand Paul is now one of the biggest defenders of Donald Trump out there today. Now, they would like to be in the same position. And that's why last night was all about kissing Joe Biden's soon to be out of the race buttocks. You know what I mean? That was all that it was about last night. And that's the reason why they were doing that. They went after America's mother-in-law because she's now the front runner. And now it's just a matter of time until Joe is out of the race. Let me share with you again, too. This is another clip from last night. This is Joe Biden trying to defend himself on Ukraine. Now, you watch this and it's painful and you're watching this going, you know what? This is when you know the guy is just done. It's just a matter of time. It's sad. But take a listen.
The impeachment inquiry is centered on President Trump's attempts to get political dirt from Ukraine on Vice President Biden and his son Hunter. Mr. Vice President, President Trump has falsely accused your son of doing something wrong while serving on a company board in Ukraine. I want to point out there's no evidence of wrongdoing by either one of you. Having said that, on Sunday, you announced that if you're president, no one in your family or associated with you will be involved in any foreign businesses. My question is, if it's not okay for a president's family to be involved in foreign businesses, why was it okay for your son when you were vice president? Vice President Biden?
Look, my son did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. I carried out the policy of the United States government in rooting out corruption in Ukraine. And that's what we should be focusing on. And what I wanted to make a point about, and my son's statement speaks for itself. He spoke about it today. My son's statement speaks for itself.
He did a bang up job with that.
We focus on why it's so important to remove this man from office. On the 17th, look, the fact that George Washington worried on the first time he spoke after being elected president that what we had to worry about.
Looked out and said, Mom, I can't tell a lie. That cherry tree had it coming. We all remember that. I'm like that cherry tree. What?
America. This president, on three occasions, has invited foreign governments and heads of government to get engaged in trying to alter our elections. The fact is that it is outrageous. Rudy Giuliani, the president,
Benjamin
and his
Harrison,
thugs.
When he was campaigning in 1891, said, it's painful. It is so painful, and he can't help but talk and say stupid things and just go down the road of stupidity. He can't help himself. You know, and that's the thing. It's why I said I've long said Trump's the whistleblower, because Ukraine hurts Joe Biden. It doesn't hurt Donald Trump. It hurts Joe Biden. Joe Biden could have pivoted if he had had a good debate coach and said, look, I've addressed this. We did nothing wrong. But let's get to the fact is the American people don't care. They want to talk about the economy. And I'm the only one on this stage who's not going to take away their health care, their job, their blah, blah. He could have done that, which is what a good debate coach would have prepped him to do. But instead, he goes down this wacky road of George Washington and Rudy Giuliani. You know, but I mean, the answer is, look, I've addressed it. I did nothing wrong. But the American people don't care anyway. I've traveled around this country. They care about their jobs, and they're worried about losing their jobs and food on the table. You get back to the talking points about the economy. But he's too stupid, you see. He can't help himself. And that's one of the reasons why I think Trump's a whistleblower, because he knows that Joe Biden will just keep talking. And the more you talk and you're explaining, you're losing. And everybody on that stage knows it, too, which is why they were defending him, because they know he's losing and he's almost out of this race. Keep going.
Hold on. Sorry. I just follow up. Mr. Vice President, as you said, your son, Hunter, today gave an interview, admitted that he made a mistake and showed poor judgment by serving on that board in Ukraine. Did you make a mistake by letting him? You were the point person on Ukraine at the time. If you can answer.
Look, my son's statement speaks for itself. I did my job. I never discussed a single thing with my son about anything having to do with Ukraine. No one has indicated I have. We've always kept everything separate. Even when my son was the attorney general of the state of Delaware, we never discussed anything. So there'd be no potential conflict. My son made a judgment. I'm proud of the judgment he made. I'm proud of what he had to say. And let's focus on this. The fact of the matter is that this is about Trump's corruption. That's what we should be focusing on.
Not the economy. See, that is a siren song of somebody who is losing and losing badly. By the way, I played this earlier, but a quick little montage of all of Joe Biden's stumbles. Fantastic little tongue twisters here.
I think is important is we focus on why it's so important to remove this man from office. On the 17th, look, the fact that George Washington. Right. Worried on the first time he spoke after being elected president that what we had to worry about is foreign interference in our election. Hundreds and thousands of innocent people between there and the Iraqi border. And lastly, and I apologize for going up, but lastly, I'm the only one that got moved to make sure that we could not have a magazine that had more than 10 rounds in it. Because guess what? Why in God's name should someone who's clipping coupons in the stock market make, in fact, when you register it,
likelihood. Please, I got to clip some coupons in the stock market real fast. Apple's got a sale, 25% off a share, but I got to clip the coupon. You must bring the coupon. You can't have any copies of it. So hang on, let me clip my Wall Street coupons real quick.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.